M23. Number 1B.
It answered to all the philosophies that she felt, why do all the philosophers try to build up a new system of ethics and morals? Why don't they go back to Jesus? He had it. Why don't they take it from him? He proved that standard of ideas and the morals. And Jesus had quite a scientific concept of good, namely not that which Shakespeare had, because when they called him good master, he said, "What callest thou me good? There is no one good but the Father in heaven." Can you see? He could show at once that good is not a quality that man can express out of himself. That good is a quality of God. And therefore only God is good. And good is God. And naturally, well, Mrs. Eddy points out that about in 40 languages in the world, God and good are the same term. So Mrs. Eddy asks, therefore, that ethics must be left to God and his Christ. And so she speaks about the ethics of truth. Can you see? Now she binds ethics back to God, to the Christ, to the synonymous term, and no more to man, and to his thinking, and to his way of evaluating anything and everything. She calls that God, that good, spirit. In the definition of good in the glossary, it is said, she says that good is first God, and it gives the synonymous term which we know about good, namely spirit. That good is spirit, think of it. That good is spirit. That good has nothing to do with people, with human qualities, with human affections, with human standards, but only with the spiritual, with the third degree, and no more with the second degree of the translation of mortal mind. When she defines good in the glossary further as omnipotence, omniscience, omnipresence, omniaction. There is actually practically no bigger definition we have than this definition of good. What more can we really define than that one thing, that it is omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent, and omniactive? So we can see what an enormous big value, and a scientific value, good must have when it is considered in the right way. No more in the human way, but translated back into being as a divine fact. All right. If we summarize what we have discussed right now, we could say, all right, from the human standpoint, good and evil are relative concepts. They are absolutely relative values from the human standpoint. But we don't want to have to do with relative values, would you? I don't think you would. Therefore, if we want to have absolute values, we must say, from a divine standpoint, good is an absolute value. Good is God, is an absolute value, and so this, the standard of value, as Bertrand Russell called it, are our ideas of of God, the ideas of mind, spirit, soul, principle, life, truth, and love. These are our values. This is our ethics. The ethics of Christian Science is that all is mind. Actually, the moment he says all is mind, mind always reflects all the other synonymous terms. Therefore, the ethics is to have nothing else but the ideas of the seven synonymous terms. That is the value, the ethical values we can have. And therefore, what do we have to do? We have to be one with those values, or we have no ethics. And because ethics means to use these values. And therefore she says, or Mrs. Eddy says, that the ethic is that all is mind, and, there comes another one, and that the scientist must conform to God's requirements. You see? So, the ideas of God are good, but in order that it is an ethics, it means that we have to use these ideas of good. But how? We cannot use them as if they were bits and pieces. We can only use them by being one with the divine principle of those ideas. Therefore, the scientist must conform to God's requirement. And in this we have summarized, so to say, the whole tonality of the chapter on teaching. That it all has to do, as we will see, with the scientist being one with the principle of being, and therefore conform really to that principle of being. You will see afterwards when we go through the seventh subject that each subject always indicates this very ethics, namely that each epitome runs that way, that teaching Christian Science demands strict adherence to mind, afterwards strict adherence to spirit, afterwards strict adherence to soul, and so on, so that brings out really the ethics of Christian Science. And this is what is teaching Christian Science. Let me approach the subject again from another angle, just to get clear about it, because I know the moment one begins to shake a little bit at the foundation of human morals, it's always also a bit on the shaky ground. It isn't very much like, but it is necessary. It is absolutely imperative that we get a better sense of good or of ethics. Mrs. Eddy makes such a point in this chapter about ethics and what belongs to it, and yet in the whole textbook she hardly uses that term, ethics. And if we follow through the chapter how she uses ethics, one sees the following thing. She uses it for the first time in spiritualism, in the chapter Christian Science versus Spiritualism, and she uses their ethics in a negative sense, as if it would be the first degree that she is indicating there. Because she says, human philosophy, ethics, and superstition. Can you see? It's a hard saying what she says. She puts into one box superstition and ethics. It's on the same level. She doesn't have a great admiration for ordinary ethics. She puts human philosophy, ethics, and superstition afford no demonstrable divine principle. We have seen that. Ordinary ethic has no absolute value, has no principle behind it. All what it has is human thinking behind it, a human evaluation of things. But it has no demonstrable divine principle behind it by which mortals can escape from sin. It says, through ordinary ethics, mortals can't escape from sin. Because if they try to escape from sin, they must make a terrific moral effort, and perhaps they achieve it, and perhaps they are the victim, perhaps they are not the victim. Yet to escape from sin is what the Bible demands. So he says, all right, then we must have another ethics. If the ordinary ethics, which he puts in the same box, in the same category as human philosophy and superstition, has no divine principle and therefore cannot save, then naturally we would ask, then we must have another kind of ethics in order to fulfill the Bible demand that we must escape from sin. The next quotation on ethics is in that chapter Objections Answered, where she says, and here again, already we get the higher sense of ethics, the second degree sense of ethics, that as a result of teaching Christian Science, ethics and temperance have received an impulse. Health has been restored and longevity increased. So you can see the improvement in the human. Saying what? That actually only Christian Science can improve ethics. That through Christian Science, ethics has received an impulse. Showing what? Showing therefore we must really investigate the ethics of the third degree of Christian Science. And here in this chapter on teaching Christian Science, we have for the first time a positive sense, the one that I have been quoting to you already, that the ethics of the science of healing is that all is mind. See now, the third degree is now linked up with the seventh, with the synonymous term. This is the ethic of the science of healing, that all is mind, and the scientist must conform to God's requirements. Then, at the end of that, of our chapter, she brings in ethics again, after she has then explained all the seven great subjects on ethics. She ends it up and the chapter up and says, neither dishonesty nor ignorance ever founded, nor can they overthrow a scientific system of ethics. This is the only time that she speaks here in this chapter about the scientific system of ethics. Yes? So, naturally, we must ask ourselves, what is this scientific system of ethics that she presents here? And that is what we'll do then tomorrow, when we go through the seven subjects. Let's look at the same question again from another angle, so that we are quite clear about the whole subject of morals and ethics. You know, there is a terrific demand, naturally, in every religion, and so also in Christian Science, of morality. But you can always see that their sense of morality is actually not that sense of morality that Mrs. Eddy had, namely the ethics of science. They think moral is moral, and the moral is moral, and that moral is that moral, which everyone feels is moral, whatever that morality is. If it's the morality of Jesus, or if it's the morality of the Islam, or if the morality of the of New England in last century, or if it's the morality of the young people today, they are all different. So we really should shake us up a little bit about that terrible term, moral, and first say to ourselves, now, what is actually moral? What does it imply? If we look at it from a divine standpoint, from the standpoint of divine science. You know that Mrs. Eddy puts the moral qualities in the second degree of the scientific translation of mortal mind, not in the third degree, indicating already that they are transitional qualities, that they do not belong really to the spiritual, which is the third degree, that they do not belong to reality, which is the third degree, that they do not belong really to understanding, which is the third degree, but actually to that second degree. Now, even animals can be moral, and are moral, in the human connotation of morality. And sometimes I think animals are even more moral than the ordinary moral codex of religion. But we can ask ourselves, really, can they save themselves through that moral? Can they save mankind through that moral? They certainly can't. Or shall we put it even a bit more bluntly, if you can bear it? Haven't you ever seen that a moral codex can be very, very brutal? Absolutely brutal. Haven't you seen that? Just think about the brutality of somebody who wants to be moral and somehow can't make it quite. And what happens? He condemns himself. He curses himself. Isn't that brutal? Isn't that brutal? Or if he can't quite make it, he expects to be penalized for it and says there must be a penalty for it. Isn't that brutal? See, Paul actually had seen all that stuff. He had already seen that the law that he wanted to obey, he couldn't obey, that what he wanted to do good, he didn't, and that which he didn't want to do, that he didn't. He could see that stuff all along that way already. But still Christianity, the religious sense of Christianity, hangs on to that old stuff of morality, and the whole world then taxes anybody who is not acting according to their standard of morality, taxes him and makes evil a person, makes evil a place or a thing. Exactly the opposite of what Mrs. Eddy says, that evil is neither person, place, nor thing. Can you see what morality does? It really destroys the whole spiritual sense of Christian science because it builds on that false human standard of values instead of the divine standard of values. The moralist, the one who feels he really is somebody, he really doesn't do anything bad. Now he wouldn't do that. No. He would rather let himself be crucified than to do anything that is not according to the moral standard. Oh no, he's too good for that. And do you know where he lands? Little by little he feels he's really good. Who calls me good? Yes, I am good. I'm really good. And it depends on doing good. And very soon he feels that he's the origin of good, that he is the creator of good, and very soon he begins to play God, because God is good and he is so good. He begins to judge all mankind, he begins to judge his neighbor, he begins to rain down everybody and nobody's anymore any good. Is that a Christianity? Is that moralism, Christianity? It doesn't do anything with real ethics. So he begins to judge and condemn. Is it nice to condemn people? Well, you know, I always loved it, right? I didn't understand much English when I went through John Dolly's class, but one thing I understood, and that did stick to me, that he always quoted Isaiah and said, human righteousness, says Isaiah, human righteousness is like filthy rags. And that's it. Huh? This human righteousness, that moral sense of being righteous, of being moral, is like filthy rags. Isaiah knew it, and Paul knew it, and we should know it. It is time that we should know it. That we really base ourselves on something higher than just human acts, but on an understanding of what is true Christianity. John Dolly used always to define true Christianity in a very simple way in regard to good and evil. He had a wonderful shortcut sentence. He said, trace every evil back to animal magnetism and trace all good back to God. Which means, don't trace either evil or good back to people, to a place or thing. They are neither good nor evil. Trace everything that is evil back to animal magnetism, and everything that is good back to principle. And in this way, do something which is also quoted here from the chapter on teaching, which is a very big point. Therefore, do not weigh the human in the scale with the divine. That's what we usually do. That we judge somebody humanly and weigh him in the divine scale. The human has nothing to do with the divine and cannot measure up to the divine, and therefore we have to weigh everybody and everything divinely and never humanly. Then we trace evil back to animal magnetism and trace good back to God. Yeah. We have seen that in this chapter that two big points therefore seem to be the theme running through it. The one is the ethics that we have discussed, that all is mine, and the second, which brings out this ethic, which shows the how to bring out this ethic, is that strict adherence to the divine principle. Now, when one feels that such a tone or such a subject runs or is the main theme of a chapter, one does good to go and take the whole text of these 20 pages or so and just do some selective reading. Selective reading means what? That if you feel that in a chapter there is one theme running through it and you are not quite sure, is this really a subject that comes up and up and up, then just take the text and read it through very quickly, only with one thing in your ear. Is that tone somewhere there? And take out, those references that conform to this theme. So here I just want, as an example, to show you how through that whole chapter, always that same tonality runs right through of strict adherence to principle. She says that we must conform. You just have to hear, the terms are always different, but you have to hear the tonality of it, that the scientist must conform to God's requirements, that the student must adhere strictly to the teaching of Christian Science, that it's necessary of bringing thought in accord with the spirit of truth and love. Can you hear? That's the ethic, to be in accord with the principle, that all is the principle and all is mind. She speaks about the strict adherence to the divine principle and rules of scientific method, to abide by the moral of truth, to abide by the divine principle, or to be consistent in following the leadings of mind. The Christian scientist should understand and adhere strictly to the rules of divine metaphysics. Can you hear always the same thing coming up? You have to do that. You see, that strengthens within you the sense, oh yes, this is the theme of that chapter. Or that she says the student, any student who adheres to the divine rules of Christian Science can demonstrate it. Whosoever would demonstrate the healing of Christian Science must abide strictly by its rules. Heed every step. Be persistent in it, and labor in it, and so on. Can you hear what the ethics is? The ethics is doing good. What kind of good? To be in line, strictly in line with that which alone is good, namely with the synonymous term. That's our ethics. That's doing good. That's the ethical conduct. The ethical conduct is not, you shall not drink, you shall not smoke. But it says you have to be in absolute strict concordance and correspondence and adherence and synchronized with that divine principle. Then, as Bertrand Russell said, then you will do the right thing without wanting to do it. You irresistibly, you are led to do that. So the whole tone of this goes through this chapter of strictly adhering, combined with all those wonderful qualities which are necessary for strictly abiding, to persevere in it, to be persistent in it, to pursue it, to hold fast to it, to labor, to pray, to watching, working, abiding strictly. Can you hear the tone? You only have to hear the tone, not the words. So that she said, actually there is no excellence without labor in the direct line. I love that. We'll perhaps talk about it later on. There is no excellence without labor. You have to do something. One has to do something. One can't just sit back and fold one's hands. It's an active conduct of ethics that says, golly, you have to pull up your socks and do something. You have to work and watch and pray and be persistent in it and hold fast to it, and do something about it, and not scatter your fire, and have some kind of self-sacrifice, and so on. Yeah, I have to shut up now, the time is over.